Hi there, and welcome to Subjected to Cinema, the podcast that tortures cinephiles by making them face their blind spots. I'm Evan.
I'm George.
And I'm Brandon.
And this week, Brandon subjected us to Mr. Baseball.
So dismayed.
Oh, sorry, kid. We'll get him next inning.
There ain't going to be a next inning.
What are you talking about?
It's 4-4.
No game can continue after 15 innings.
So when do we make it up?
No, I'm sorry, babe. It's over.
It's 4-4. A ball game can't end in a goddamn tie.
Come on, man. It's over. Let's go.
Yeah, Mr. Baseball is one of my childhood favorite movies. It's, you know, in my top three of baseball movies. I don't think a lot of people would put it there, and I, to this day, do not understand why. I think it's a important movie in American history.
Important.
I even go as far as to say that. I go as far as to say important American movie classic.
Wow.
You know, baseball players to this day, if they have to go play ball in Japan, they watch this movie.
That's true.
That would make sense.
It is still accurate to the Japanese baseball experience, but
it really is.
What are the other two?
That's exactly my question.
Okay. Well, number one, Little Big League. That's my top favorite.
Okay.
I think the love for baseball is just oozing from that movie, which I don't think you get from a lot of different baseball movies out there.
Sure.
And number three is Major League.
Oh,
just
okay.
Mandatory.
All right.
Yeah.
I presume Major League was on there.
Yeah.
I can see. There's some other choices that can be depending on how you want to look at the sport. But yeah, like the Sandlot,
that's,
for example.
That's the thing. How you want to look at the sport. You get into the other movies. I think a lot of people put Bull Durham.
Bull Durham is an excellent
choice. It's not really about baseball.
Bull
Durham.
What about Field of Dreams?
Again, yeah, just Kevin Costner. It's about his love for baseball.
Yeah, that's more about baseball. Grief than baseball.
Or for the love of the game, which is more about a man dealing with his relationships than baseball.
See?
Major League.
The pride of the Yankees.
Major League taught me a lot of things when I watched it as a formidable 12 and 13 year old several times, but I learned nothing about baseball.
Oh, I was hoping.
You learned you liked Charlie Sheen movies?
I learned a lot of language that I hadn't before. Oh.
you want to guess what my fourth top is?
Ooh.
Sandlot?
Nope.
Angels in the Outfield?
Nope. League of Your Own.
That's an excellent choice. Yeah, that's a wonderful baseball movie.
So I guess we'll get into Mr. Baseball right from the start. Well, I guess we have to do 90 seconds. Is it 90 seconds or 60? It's 90 seconds, right?
It's 90 seconds.
Who wants to try to recap this movie in 90 seconds?
Well, George missed last episode, so I'm thinking
he needs to pay. Okay, well, I don't think I need 90 seconds for this movie. There's not that much plot.
What are you talking about, dude? There's plenty of plot.
There's so much plot. All right, you got 90 seconds, and go.
A young Tom Selleck has a nightmare that he's a bad baseball player. He wakes up in a cold sweat in the bed of, like, a sorority girl, maybe? I don't know. Come to find out, he's kind of a washed-up has-been. He's traded to Japan. He joins the Chunichu Dragons. He's very arrogant, kind of an asshole. He ends up kind of going on a date with the woman who's in charge of the marketing. I don't know. I like that character better on Ted Lasso. And he thinks he's getting lucky, but she shoots him down. But then she gives him the eye. It's like, but maybe you get lucky later. He's in a slump. He's kind of a dick. And then the owner is going to fire the manager and wants him to fire Tom Selleck as well. Come to find out that he's been dating the manager's daughter. She sets him up in a parent trap, so they have to have dinner together and become best friends. So then they decide to improve each other. Jack finally decides to take the game seriously. He has an opportunity to be recruited by the Dodgers, but his girlfriend is upset about it. He does well at the big game against the Giants. They win. And then the other guy is recruited to be on the Dodgers, and he stays in Japan.
By the way, the other guy was Dennis Haybert.
I saved that for later.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, where did the other guy come into this? You still got 90 seconds.
So important.
Is the 90 seconds still going? Tell us who the other guy.
I have in my notes. I'm like, President Palmer is recruited by the Dodgers.
You're in good hands with Allstate.
Yeah. He's, I don't recognize anyone else, so later he'll come up as my favorite cameo and favorite part of the movie.
Also, it was the Yomiuri Giants. They're a very important team in Japan. Anyway,
Chunichi Dragons?
Well, no, that was his team, but the team, their rivals.
The
Dragons.
Yes.
Giants. Or sorry, Giants, not Dragons. Giants.
Yeah.
Cool. So what works? What did y'all like about it?
Oh, God. Baseball.
Well, let me tell you.
We're going to have a conversation. Right, yeah, George, go ahead, because we're going to have to talk about Japanese baseball for minutes.
When you suggested this movie, I thought this was the movie Mr. Destiny with Jim Belushi. Have you seen that? Where he wishes he hadn't missed a hit when he was in Little League, and he thinks his life will be different. So Michael Caine grants his wish, like, It's a Wonderful Life, and then he gets to become a baseball star, but he ends up giving it all away because he for the love of Linda Hamilton. And so I'd seen that movie 1,000 times as a kid, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in forever. I haven't even thought about it. I told my brother, I'm about to watch this movie. Sat down, I was like, I don't remember Tom Selleck in Mr. Destiny. And then and then I started it, and I was like, oh, this is not at all the movie I thought it was. So it began with great disappointment that was cured by... Come to find out, young Tom Selleck was kind of hot. So young, hot Tom Selleck fixed my disappointment that this wasn't a C-list Jim Belushi movie.
Nice. I have not seen that movie, but I have seen Like Mike. What are your thoughts, Evan?
Same thing.
Well, I was going to say, well, first off, I was going to say, how old was Tom Selleck in this movie?
I don't know.
He's actually like not.
Approaching
he's actually,
40 somewhere.
No, he was born in 1945. So this is 92.
Yeah, this was in 92.
So yeah, he's in like his late 40s here.
Yeah, late 40s. Okay.
Yeah, but you know, he's not, you know, that old dentist on Friends that Monica had no business with.
Yeah,
I think okay, that's fair. Or really, or the family like leader.
Yeah, or fighting with Rosie O'Donnell about guns. You know, so
blue bloods.
Exactly.
One of my favorite aspects of this movie, I mean, it's just all the visual authenticity of it all. And I think Tom Selleck looks like an over-the-hill baseball player.
He
like,
sure does.
He just he fucking looks like it.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Does.
Even with his shirt off, he looks like it. It's insane.
See, he also looks like the made-for-TV version of Burt Reynolds. Which is that? I mean, admittedly, like
no, he is. He's like the TJ Maxx, Burt Reynolds.
Yeah, like his role in Magnum PI is, that's why I think of him that way. Which apologies to him for that, because I don't wish to disrespect Magnum PI in any way, shape, or form. It's a classic, and he also did movies like Quigley's Down Under and stuff like that. No disrespect whatsoever. It's just he reminded me of like the very next generation's version of Burt Reynolds, and it's,
I mean,
like
yeah,
that mustache,
fairness. Yeah,
the mustache, the chest hair, you know. Let's be honest, the kind of plucky, you know, like charming attitude that he always has, where he's the tough guy, the kind of a dick, but also like lovable at the same time, charismatic, like yeah.
Lovable's doing a lot of work in that sentence.
I that depends on what you've seen him in, I guess, because personally, it's Magnum PI. Come on.
Yeah.
This is Magnum PI plays baseball, and it's fantastic.
It pretty much is. It is Magnum PI plays baseball in Japan.
I think that's how they pitched it.
I mean,
was there anything else y'all liked about it? Actually, it was. He was introduced into production really early. But
I would say accurate representation of Japanese baseball. Incredibly accurate representation of Japanese baseball. I looked into it afterwards because I was very curious about how it was like. And as you mentioned already, they use it as a sort of like a training tool for Westerners that are going over to the Japanese leagues. And part of that is because they had a lot of input from people who had played in the Japanese leagues. A lot of American players that came forward and said, yeah, I will make sure to give you accurate information. So you get what is an authentic experience. You get what are actually, like, some of the situations where they're playing may seem a little ridiculous, but they're based on things that actually happened. There's a scene where he's that the big game in the end against the Giants, where he's going for the record and they're the Giants pitchers throwing balls to try to get him to walk, and he flips the bat over. That actually happened in a game to another American player that was going, he was going to beat another Japanese baseball record if he hit the ball. And so the pitchers intentionally walked him to the point that he was just like, whatever, screw this. And he flipped the bat over and swung with it upside down.
Yep.
Just to make the point. The Selleck doing that is an homage to an actual thing. Like, multiple stuff that happens in this movie are realistic historical moments in Japanese baseball that he is reinventing for the film. But this is a tried and true dedication to Japanese baseball. And I know this because during the pandemic, when everything shut down and ESPN had nothing to show and they weren't letting fans into the stadiums anywhere, the Japanese were still playing baseball. And if you waited at 3 in the morning, ESPN would broadcast those games. So I rediscovered my love of watching sports during the pandemic by watching Japanese baseball. Wow. And it is glorious to behold.
Wow.
Go Dragons.
I'm not going to lie. I had gotten a little bit into Japanese baseball recently, too, since there's a Cy Young Award-winning player, Trevor Bauer, who kind of got blacklisted in the MLB. So now he's playing in Japan, and he's been documenting everything. And I'm like, I desperately want somebody to take all that documentation and take everything that you've learned about him trying to adjust to how they train, adjust to how they play. He details everything, even down to like the pitches that he chooses to throw and at what frequency. He literally has a video where he sits down there and talks about it. He's kind of insane, but it's we need a new version of Mr. Baseball just based off of all that video evidence. It's fascinating. I feel like I'm living the movie just by watching his YouTube channel every week.
Also, it's kind of fun because more Japanese players are starting to make it over. I mean, we have Shohei Ohtani, who's been the big draw, even though he played historically for a terrible team up until what will be this season, now that he's been picked up by the Dodgers.
Yep.
And they have another pitcher that they've just brought over from Japan as well, who's supposed to be incredible. And so I'm curious to see more and more Japanese players are ending up in MLB in America. We're paying a lot more attention to the Japanese league. So, yeah, I could see there would be certain things you would have to drop. There are certain parts of this movie that I don't know if they hold up very well. But, yeah, I would say we could revisit this now, looking at it from modern American baseball to modern Japanese baseball and the influences that we're having on each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, but did you have something to say, George, before we move on?
Yeah, but it didn't fit into the conversation at this point.
George has realized that both of us like baseball, Brandon.
Yeah, we're now sports guys.
Yeah. The
Sportscast.
Bro.
Featuring George.
I will say that another thing that really worked very well was the hard work of the Foley artists on those hits. Especially Ricky Davis's hits. Those just cracks were amazing. That was great sound. I was most impressed with that.
No, you got that right. I mean, the sound effects in this were fantastic. Especially Tom Selleck's Japanese commercial. Let's be honest.
Excellent.
Some things we will never forget. Tom Selleck dressed as a sumo wrestler will never leave my brain.
Oh, man. Yeah, the sound effects are just I cite that a lot when I tell people how great and authentic this movie is that the sound effects are not what you would normally expect from a baseball movie, because But there are something that you would expect from like a Japanese movie. They just, I didn't look to see who the Foley artist is, but it's clearly inspired by Japanese filmmaking. I'd say several aspects of this film are inspired by, I don't even want to say inspired because they filmed most of this in Japan. So they had that cast and crew.
Yeah. But, in fact, actually I looked it up specifically, about 95% of the film was filmed in and around Nagoya.
Yep. So that kind of brings me into what do you guys think didn't work, if anything?
Well,
I'll take nothing.
I mean, he's an asshole. Right.
Well, yes, he is.
And that for much longer than lead characters are usually assholes in movies where you end up supposed to root for them. I think that's my. I mean, besides the racism, I think that was one of my least favorite parts. It's just like, oh my god, stop being such a fucking dick. And I mean, finally, it's like way past the halfway point where he starts not being a dick. But at that point, I was kind of over him. So personally, I was just like, I wish I was rooting for you. I was rooting for the team, but yeah, I could kind of give a fuck about him.
Well, that's the thing, is there's specifically that scene where he goes to the shrine.
Oh, my God.
And he and Hiroko are racist. Walking. Well, he and Hiroko are walking out afterwards, and he says something that upsets her. And she walks off, of course, and he comes after her and he apologizes. But he makes it a point to say several things that he knows about himself. And he basically admits that he knows he's an asshole. And that's the thing, and he knows it's a personal failing. And he's accepted that it's a personal failing. He knows that it is.
I don't know if I buy to that as a device. You know, it'd be like, hey, you know when I was racist back there? I just like to say racist things, you know? And well, I don't mean to offend, but, you know, I just hate N-words. You know, it's just like, it doesn't really...
I'm just a racist. Take me or leave me.
It didn't really... But I
don't see it as him being intentionally racist so much as him being an ignorant asshole.
For sure.
Yeah, but he is also somebody that shows that he can learn from it. Yeah. And Not at first, no.
Because he's told repeatedly, the things you are doing are ignorant and racist, and he's like, ah, fuck it.
True.
You know what's funny about that is, like, I feel like he is capable of learning. And it's funny that it takes him longer to learn the human side, because when you look at him adjusting to Japan, he figures out a way how to adjust pretty fast. So like an example is when he first walks into his apartment, he hits his head on the ceiling. If you look at scenes after that, like starting as soon as he's walking through the halls of the stadium for the first time, he's looking up and he's ducking. Like they take time for you to see him physically adjust to several things throughout the movie. And I'm like, oh, neat. He's adapting. But also from a personal sense, he's not adapting. What the fuck is his problem?
Yeah. Well, so he's also been forced into this situation. This is not by choice.
Mm.
So, and that's part of what makes it interesting as well, because he's lucky to have another American player on the team that he can interact with. And that's something that gives him kind of a foil to help him in Dennis Haysbert. Yeah, absolutely. But it also is like the one person that he can really connect with, like, right off the bat.
Yeah.
And even though he's learning and adapting, he also has the few other guys that are Americans point out stuff to him, and also point out the stuff where they're having prejudice brought against them. So stuff like not breaking Japanese records, how they're going to intentionally be kept from doing stuff, how their batter's box is way larger, like the strike zone is huge for them. Yeah. The way that they get treated is going to be very different, and a lot of it is prejudice as well. And so whereas he is ignorant and he's starting to learn in some ways, he's also dealing with a newfound prejudice that he's not had to experience before, and he's not doing any of this willingly because he's been forced to come here.
That's
so true. I think he deserves a little bit more grace. This is not the Bad News Bears Go to Japan, which admittedly pulled off a lot of the same jokes way longer and was way happier about how racist it was.
All I'm saying is that this isn't the only movie where the hero does not want to go on the journey he's being sent on. And according to that Joseph Campbell wheel, he should make the change right around the halfway part. So when we're getting past that halfway part and you're still being a dick and still not adapting, that's where I was just like, okay, enough of you. So I think that was my biggest flaw with the film, is that his resistance to following common narrative went too far, and I started getting over him before I had a chance to root for him.
Yeah. Even though I didn't, you know, I kind of just put up with him.
a lot of people
I was more, you know, fixated on the whole culture shock and all that whole business, more so than the love subplot. I was looking at an interview where Tom Selleck actually expressed, he answered, you know, that criticism. He was like, this is something I like to do. I like to push characters to the extreme of unlikableness. That way he has a lot of room to go back on, like a lot more room for redemption, which I'm like, okay, that methodology helps. I just don't feel like there was enough time for that in this. Like, he went too way past the mid.
You felt he went too far.
Yeah,
he went for way too long, that his, you know, his redemption was very abrupt.
And the turn was really fast. Montage. Yeah. It was like, oh no, we got trapped at a dinner party together. Guess I'll accept my life circumstances and become a better person and helpful. And it's like, wait, what happened at that dinner? You didn't show me that scene.
So first off, there are a couple of cut scenes.
Yeah, there are.
That involve him talking to the coach. But I do want to point out that the most important thing he says, so we have as part of the love plot, there's a scene where she bathes him, and it is a fantastic scene in which she literally walks in a towel, starts rubbing his like body with a sponge and hot water, and then immediately gets him to tell him her like what is his greatest fear. And it's like, damn, she breaks down the emotional barriers real fast. And it is, he is afraid of not being a baseball player. And so the flip at the dinner party is when he is out walking with the coach afterwards, and the coach admits that if he doesn't like start to play by their rules, both he is out of a job as a baseball player and the coach is out of a job as well. And so the one thing that they both are baseball players, and the one thing that this guy is terrified of is no longer being a baseball player. So in that moment, he realizes just how much he really does have to stand to lose. And so that's the switch. That is what flips, is his greatest fear is about to come true, and he has to change to stop it.
Yeah, I feel like also they missed the opportunity. Well, I guess it's not missed an opportunity, but clearly the coach also, Uchiyama, also had that fear. And you can really see it on him. It's just not expressed in any way, because his character is his character.
I mean, his character is very stiff and very formal for most of it. I mean, a few of the scenes where you see him outside of the coaching job, he's a little bit more relaxed. But yes, he takes his job. Obviously, he takes his job very seriously. And considering all the records that his character is said to have set, it makes sense just how serious he takes this. This is another dude that loves baseball.
Even not on the field, he's not very relaxed. He's like, you don't call me coach here. And it's like, well, that's that's not especially relaxed, but sure, we'll be a bit more casual.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Like, the first time you see him out of the game, he still looks like he just doesn't have a hat on. He's the same person, just with no hat on. And it is like, when you see pictures of the real coach that he was inspired by, guess what? Coach looks just like that.
Yeah.
It's just, I guess that's just how he is. And he was that way until, I don't think he died yet, but you know,
no.
he's just that way.
No, that is a, Ken Takakura, he's a very famous Japanese actor.
Yeah,
he actually did pass away in 2014.
Oh well, I mean, like the not just him. He does actually have that. I remember he played a gangster in some movie that I was.
He's played multiple. He had a very long acting career. But yeah, you mean the coach that he's inspired by?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
He was like a legend. He's like a legendary baseball coach. And, yeah. But yeah, let's kind of get into the historic ties in the context of this movie. You know, I love it. I love it explicitly for displaying that transition of when you are suddenly dropped in Japan and you have to adjust. I enjoyed the one of the main themes of the movie, at least according to the director. He mentioned that the whole idea is that he is dropped into the situation and he doesn't want to change. But welcome to Japan, where it's demanded that you change. Like, everything will stop to force you to assimilate. And it's about that battle between, you know, immovable forces, as they say. It's funny that he mentions that, because this movie had went through a lot of rewrites, like a lot. Do you remember how many, the count of how many people touched this script, Evan? Wasn't it like six? It was like two original writers.
It was, I want to say formally, like four different writers, and then like two other people were brought in to help. Like Tom Selleck had his own guy going over the script. At least one of the writers wanted to focus way more on the cultural aspects, like the culture classes.
That was what the director and his collaborator, that's what they wanted.
They wanted way more of the racism stuff, guys. They did.
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. There was an interview where a lady asked them, and this is like freaking 91, and she's like an old lady, 92, and she's an old lady. She's like, do you feel like the Japanese people will be she said, did you guys have to pull back on the disrespectful comments of the Japanese people? He's just like, did you see it? And he was like, I wish I could do more. It's just like, dude, man, I guess in 92, that's light work, but like, holy shit. It's than Rush Hour bad.
Oh, well. But at the same time, like, if we want to put this into historical context, what is going on between Japan and the United States, or specifically what has happened in Japan in the last decade? And that is that Japan has suddenly exploded what feels like almost overnight in terms of international influence and economic power. And in the 80s, there's a lot of people that become Japanophiles, and that starts becoming a thing. But you also have a lot of fear of Japan and how powerful it suddenly and rapidly become. And you do get that statement early on in the film from Hiroko, where she says, Japanese take everything from around the world and make it their own and make it better. And you have the Zaibatsu are running things. And this is before the economic collapse that comes in the early 90s for Japan. So there is a lot of fear from Westerners specifically about how powerful Japan is, how Japan is going to force the rest of the world to assimilate to its style, and how it's going to control everything. And so I think the film needs to be considered in that context, that it is still being written with that kind of fear in mind, that this is a country that could end up ruling the world, basically. And it affects a variety of things, not just baseball movies, but science fiction, music, a lot of American 90s TV shows have soundtracks that are very heavily jazz inspired, a lot of saxophone in American productions in the 90s. Do y'all know where that came from? City pop, a Japanese music genre from the late 70s. So a lot of Japanese music ended up becoming more and more inspiring on American music. A lot of that culture came over. We started getting way more of their electronics, way more toys, way more animation. Everything that we were seeing, all of this technology that's coming in, so much of it is controlled by the Japanese and dominating in American markets, that there is genuine concern. And this movie feeds on some of that, I would say.
You know, they were trying to take over the film studio that was producing this movie too. With that, And to go back to the whole City Pop comment, let's not forget that they were heavily inspired by Black soul music.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's
in the City Pop.
It's very much a Japanese take on jazz. It is absolutely inspired by, like, it is jazz, basically. It is their take on jazz. And so if not for, you know, this is America influencing Japan, which then turns around and influences America.
Yeah, it's right back. Back around. And also, you know, the director is Australian, and they're just aggressively racist people. Like, it's just deep down inside.
That's true. Also, Tom Selleck's from Detroit, and you know how they are.
Mm-hmm. The director also said, we went and, you know, in the movie, we also talk a lot of, you know, mess about Americans as well. And I'm like, just because he's going around gaijin smashing, I don't really think that's that much of a commentary on America, more so than just, you know, this character is just being obnoxious. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe they see it as just like, this is how all Americans are. I'm just like,
No.
Maybe, I guess. I don't know.
No, well, that's the thing is, no, that's not how all the Americans are in the film either, though. Like,
that's true.
The other American
players, they're all respectful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they point out they've had time to adjust, and it's taken an adjustment period, and they may not want to be there because they might miss their families. In the case of the Hammer, as he is called, Dennis Haysbert's character, Max Dubois, mentions at one point, just kind of offhand, he has a family back in the States. He's been playing in Japan for years. So yeah, like, he puts up with it. And I have a genuine question about his nickname because, well,
doesn't he explain it at some point? I feel like
he says, don't ask. It's a Japanese thing, but his nickname is the Hammer. And so do you know what that makes me think of? Hammer and Hank.
Oh, okay.
So here's the thing.
I was going to say,
a black man comes to Japan to play baseball, and all the Japanese immediately use the nickname for the one other black man they know from baseball.
Yeah. That's what it is. Cool. All right. Better or worse than Major League? Let's have that discussion.
Ooh.
If you're interested in a movie with a lot of baseball, it's better. But if you're looking for a movie that is funnier, then Major League wins, right? Like, Major League's funnier, raunchier, and a little bit more fun.
Okay, I would agree with,
but the baseball's not that great, isn't it?
I would say the baseball and Mr. Baseball is fantastic. The baseball is handled incredibly well in Mr. Baseball. The melodrama portions, more about him learning about himself, I think it's better handled. It reminded me a little bit of, have either of you seen Grand Prix? No.
Unless it has Frank Stallone in it.
It just definitely does not have Frank Stallone. Right,
watched that movie.
Yeah, no, it's about, you know, formula car racing, and it's groundbreaking for its time. But there's different male characters in it, and it's the melodrama of what they're going through, and it's, I don't know, I always took it as a very interesting look at masculinity, his looks at baseball and his relationship to it feels more akin to that, where I start to feel like, okay, how does this man see himself as a man? Because he sees himself as a baseball player first and foremost, and without that, he is not a man anymore. And so I saw it more as an interesting just study at this, I mean, obvious, full of himself, kind of a dick. Well, not kind of a dick, definitely a dick, piece of machismo, but also having to deal with the blow to his own manhood that is this thing. Like that aspect of it, I like a lot more just from an interesting character study than Major League. So
more depth in this movie than I think was intended.
You know what? I really like Tom Selleck's mustache. I can't say no to it.
I love this. I love because this movie was pretty panned. It has like a 9%.
Oh yeah, no, I looked it up. I just it's got like an 11 understand. On Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah.
It's like it is too good for this bullshit. I didn't get to see that much depth in it, but I can intuitively feel that it's a little deeper than it lets on.
I think Tom Selleck is bringing a little bit more to it than the film actually thought. I don't think the director's bringing it, put it that way. And I think some of the other actors are bringing a little bit more to it because the Japanese cast, some of them are incredibly talented and very well established actors. Although surprisingly, Hiroko was not.
Was she brand new? Or like,
yeah, this was like, I believe this was her first film role, and she was only in like two other films, and it was like a part one and part two kind of deal. And then after that, I don't think she acted. Like, I don't know if she actually was an actress again, or at least I haven't been able to find anything about her credits over here.
That makes sense, because there are some weird things about her performance. Like, for example, I can't tell when her voice is dubbed or not. And I don't know if that's just me being racist, or like what the deal, because sometimes she'll be talking and she has like a very soft voice and she's like, you know, you need to do this, and then I'll see her mouth move more than it should, and I'm like, is that dub? I don't know, maybe she's just not good at that, but it could be dub.
I mean, it could have been like just not very well synced up ADR work.
Yeah, it's something. It's,
I mean, we still have like the one player that does speak in perfectly fine English who still gets subtitles. That does happen in this movie. Yeah, and it's like, I understood exactly what that man said. Why do I have to read it too? Like, okay, you can give me subtitles when someone is speaking in Japanese. That's fine.
When movies do that. It's so disrespectful.
You know, it's so bad when they like, I didn't need subtitles for that, guys. I understood every word he said.
So disrespectful.
They should have subtitled Tom Selleck for half of his stuff. Like, what? That man's getting a mouthful of chew right now. I don't know what the hell he just said.
All right. So what's the best line that y'all got?
Ooh, I got a few. George, you want to go first?
We're not athletes. We're baseball players.
Oh,
nailed my.
So good.
Yeah, that one's probably my absolute favorite.
That actually warped my perception of baseball players. I'm not gonna lie. Like, as a kid,
from that point on,
I would always think that. You know, when it'd be like, "Oh, you know, this football player isn't in shape." I'm like, "Does he have to be?"
Yeah. Like, all right, let's face it. All right, Albert Pujols is a very famous baseball player, now retired. He was a very large man by the end of his career. Would we say that that man was fit? Nowhere near it. But he had enough.
Not even worse.
But he understood how to hit, so that was what mattered. He didn't have to run the bases. 400-pound
pitcher.
Yeah, like he didn't have to run the bases because he would hit it hard enough he could walk around the bases.
Oh yeah,
that was the point.
Meta.
You don't have to be that fit to be a baseball player. A lot of them are, but you don't have to be. I also really liked baseball is grown men getting paid to play a game.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
he was right when he made that argument.
Yeah, like let's be honest about sports. When we talk,
I think you can come out of baseball
sports,
for that one.
You can pull back and point out that all sports are grown men being paid enormous sums of money to play games, like basketball, baseball, football, hockey. They're not quite paid as much, but it's getting up there, and it is prohibitively larger than any female version. Like WNBA, we don't pay those women shit. And it's pathetic.
They're still getting paid, though.
Not
if you get $1, you are being paid to play a game.
Yes, that is true.
I've seen them drive up to
WNBA
players
are paid so little in comparison. It's a joke.
I've seen them drive up to the stadium in a Toyota Solara. Yeah.
So the reason Brittany Griner got arrested in Russia was because she went over there to play basketball because they paid better than the American leagues. And a lot of WNBA players will leave the U.S. in the offseason to go play in Europe and places like that because they get paid better.
Yeah, better, but not they're not getting paid at all. Just saying. They are also I'm going to be equal opportunity here. Women are also paid to play games.
Yes, that's true. Yes. It's just is it a livable lower wage?
Middle class citizens, okay?
Yeah, that's true. They're making slightly better than minimum wage. We overpay a lot of sports guys. So like the men get paid god ridiculous amounts of money. So
they get revenue sharing. So it is what it is.
Now but, endorsement deals. Now if you get those, that's some sweet, sweet cash right there.
What's your favorite line, Brandon?
Look, I led the team in ninth inning doubles in a month of August.
That is such a bullshit stat, yet I know it's a stat. that's the best part is like I knew this is a freaking stat because it's baseball. There's stats for everything. Hey, how many times did Shoeless Joe Jackson spit on the mound? Well, it's 37 this many times per year. And god damn it, we know that.
46 jock itches per inning.
How many times does this team on average spit during the third inning? Well, it's we know this. We know month, like Bob. Analytics is from baseball, folks. Come on. In the month of if you want to know the stat for anything, in the month of anything, on the day of anything, it exists in baseball.
You know, baseball is for nerds.
That's for sure.
I think we all need to accept that now. You know, it's a nerds game.
No, it really is.
That's what Moneyball taught us.
I like to point out. I like to point out. First off, yes, Moneyball is fantastic. And in fact, actually, in terms of great baseball movies, yeah, I would say Moneyball is actually very accurate. Look at the sport. But one of my favorite things about baseball is that it is a pitcher and a batter having a chess match throwing a ball.
Well, a whole bunch of people get to sit there and watch.
Yeah, yes. Including most of the team.
That's it, because the pitcher and the catcher work together to figure out, okay, what am I going to throw against this guy? And the batter's sitting there thinking, what is this guy going to throw at me that I'm going to, how am I going to have to swing to hit it the way that I've been taught to swing? And so the pitcher's like, well, if I throw it here, he might be able to do that. So I don't want to throw that pitch. I've thrown that pitch too many times. This guy might have noticed how I throw this pitch. No, I got to go. Can I throw this? I'm going to throw this pitch and see how he goes. It is a battle of wills between the two of them. And it's basically a giant chess match of this is how I am orchestrating this game, this inning, and this individual batting competition.
Yep.
That is why baseball is beautiful, because it's that ridiculous. And we have stats on all of it.
That's why when I was a kid, I liked to pitch. I didn't want to do nothing else because everything else was boring. Cool. Worst line that y'all got?
Jack Elliott here, bringing the best of Major League thrills for the fellas and free mustache rides for the ladies.
You know, so, to follow that up, she has her response to that I had as a worst line too, because I couldn't even tell what she was mummering. It's just like, you know, some mustache rides you don't want to ride on. It's like, lady.
She made a joke about when she was in New York, she saw t-shirts, mustache rides, all from men that she did not want anything to do with is basically what she said. She was like, all the guys that offer me mustache rides are gross is basically what she says.
No one, and then he has to no eat, one worth mustache riding right has there. Ever offered that.
First off, you obviously have never seen Super Troopers.
I do not stand corrected.
No, he flat out says, who wants mustache rides? And it's like, come on. In this context, it works.
So you would ride his mustache?
Are you saying you wouldn't?
I'm saying I wouldn't.
I think about it.
George, I never thought you had an attractive taste in man.
But, you know, that, he Jesus, didn't look George. Like he wailed that mustache. he seemed a little fresh in the mustache game.
All right. Like maybe he just grew it out and hadn't learned how to properly.
I don't think he can wield that bad boy.
Okay, but he's but in the context of Super Troopers, it's with like two Swedish sex fiends and his wife. So like everybody there is all for it regardless. And in the case of Tom Selleck, he does have the power, and you know it. Mm-hmm. That man has been wearing a mustache for long enough. He knows. He understands, and he refuses to take it off.
Also, her hypothesis is wrong since he eventually got that mustache ride. All right, so what's your worst line?
It's like Cleveland, only I can't read the signs.
I thought that was pretty funny.
That's my calling bullshit. Funny until
that's the thing is I looked it up afterwards because I was like, it's Nagoya. How big is Cleveland compared to Nagoya? And then I discovered just how much bigger Nagoya is than Cleveland. And it's disgustingly large. And I'm like, this is bullshit.
Yeah, but I think the shot right also kind of tells you it's bullshit. Because it pans up to show like how big and beautiful and modern of a city it is. And yeah. So the camera is doing some of the work of calling bullshit on him, but that was my calling bullshit, was that line.
Yeah. So I looked it up. Nagoya has had over 2 million residents in the city itself for over 50 years. So even by the time he's there making this comment, that city's had over 2 million people living there in that city.
And about 2 million people have left Cleveland in the last 50 years.
That's also true. I looked that up as well. Cleveland's population is like 350,000 right now. And it's been dropping steadily for like 40 years. Yes, we looked at census data for this, man.
Too into this. I see it as slang.
You brought up a baseball movie and you didn't expect us to go into stats.
It's a precursor to the Ohio meme. That's just all I say. You know, people used to say Cleveland back in the day. Now we just say the whole state of Ohio. You know, if we're new to some place we don't want to be, it's just like, oh fuck, I'm in Ohio. I thought it was a funny joke.
I actually think of Iowa personally, but maybe that's just me. Nebraska.
There's a lot of states I don't want to go to. That's a long ass list. We don't have that kind of time.
South Dakota. Anyway, yeah. That is probably, in my opinion, the most racist he gets though in the film is he makes a quote about like, where are all the rice paddies or something like it's.
Oh yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, or something. That was really rough. Like, That was the part where I was just like, what the fuck, dude?
I was like God that's damn, bro.
Jesus, God. Man. What the fuck is wrong with you?
That was one of those Rush Hour moments. I don't remember feeling that way about things. The last time I remember feeling that, like, a shock from just something that casually raises was Rush Hour. But, we're kind of on the topic of calling bullshit now. What do you call it?
That's why I wanted to point out the Cleveland line being the worst one because it comes right in that.
Everybody's just feeling something about Cleveland, huh?
Yeah. Well,
this is like, don't call this wonderful city Cleveland.
Yeah. Don't insult Nagoya.
Son of a bitch.
Jesus, the entire nation of Japan deserves better.
Don't you do that. God. The worst thing to call a city is Cleveland.
Fucking Cleveland. Okay. Things that I want to call bullshit on. I'm actually a little curious about why is Hiroko driving a Volkswagen?
Because she's aesthetic as fuck. If you see her apartment, she's like the fucking coolest person on the planet.
Okay, so first off, no. If you see her apartment and the place that she works, she has this brutal industrial vibe going in her style. I
love it.
That I'm like, this lady is badass, but she's driving around Japan in a German car. I'm like,
top down.
Jesus, woman.
In his tiny in Japanese fashion.
Do you think this guy really has any chance with her?
No. That's my calling bullshit. Yeah, it's like is she endure? Does she find his racism enduring? I don't understand what the fuck's going on.
Or his masculine stubbornness. All right, he cracks wise a lot, and that, all right. Her father is dedicated to baseball and incredibly stubborn, and she is apparently just like her mom. And
which
Tom Selleck's character is dedicated to baseball and incredibly stubborn, but also a Joker who's making a lot of racism. And all right, cool.
Interracial relationship
I'm okay with, but. You know, is he there are some other things to it. So maybe it's a bit like she likes, she's attracted to that element of him. And let's be honest, she's hot as hell. I don't care how bad her ADR job is. When she walks in a towel and then immediately gets him to break down all emotional barriers, I'm like, that woman would make me melt in like 2 seconds. And I find that attractive.
Yeah, it's I get that he's like her dad, or at least they put that theme out there, obviously. But I also feel like he's very much not like her dad. Like, he fucking sucks. And there's no actual, he didn't show anything that, you know, like, I guess I'm just not interested in that kind of guy. But like a guy that just on first introduction, he just walks into a room like, who wants their pussy ate? Like, how does that, can I do that? Can I just go to the club and shout that and just walk out of there with the hottest babes? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know if you'd walk out with the hottest babe, but you could still walk in and do that. And he's relying on the fact that nobody's going to understand what the hell he just said and know what a mustache ride is.
Fair enough.
And unfortunately, he happens to encounter somebody who does. And that's why he's shocked in that moment when she responds, because he's like, oh shit, somebody knows what that is here. Like, I didn't think y'all were gonna know what that reference was.
Okay, but also keep this into consideration. That's the meet cute. So like that's what you're gonna tell your kids. Yeah, I met your mother when I asked everybody in the room if they wanted free pussy rides, and she was like, yeah, me. Like, come on.
Okay, first off, no, that's not the real meet cute. The real meet cute is her. It's no, that's her meeting him and being like, we're gonna have a business meeting. And then later, when they have the steak, that's the real meat cute, as she listens to him like start making sexual noises as he's eating that steak. Like, damn, this is better than Kansas City. And she's like, I'm going to mouth this man.
She was giving mixed signals at that business meeting.
That was
like, I knew where this was going, and I wasn't in the room with them.
Let's just say there's some Kobe beef getting offered up tonight. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of massage and a lot of beer, and that's exactly what she does to him. She gives him beer, and she massages him in the bath, and therefore, he is a cow to her.
Not fair.
Okay. And that's what he said he wanted.
I can give you that. Yeah,
that is what he said he wanted.
You're connecting dots here. This movie's deep, y'all.
I'm telling you, there is way more in Mr. Baseball than you were expecting.
What actor doesn't belong in this movie?
Oh God!
Yeah, I don't have one.
Or who does?
So I do want to say actually that the Tom Selleck, obviously we've all pointed out, he feels very believable as an aging past his prime baseball player that probably still has one great season left in him, and that's what Ken Takakura's character as the coach sees. And Ken Takakura is an incredible actor in his own right, and so I think obviously he also belongs very much. How do we feel about Dennis Haysbert?
It works
for me. Yeah, I like his character. He's my best cameo because he's the only other person I recognized.
And he looked the part.
Yeah,
to a decent amount.
Yeah, he does.
He showed that you can also be traded to a Japanese team and not be a racist prick, and that's nice to balance that's that true. Out. Like, it's not a requirement.
Yeah.
A couple of things in his favor. One, he's had more time to adjust, and two, he grew up a black man in the United States.
Yeah, and he's just a better person.
Is this really that new?
Yeah, that's what I think.
And he is a better person.
Yeah, he's just a fundamentally better person.
Yeah. You know,
he's also a better ball player, which is why the Dodgers are picking him up, you know.
You know who I'm going to say doesn't belong in this?
Who? Frank Thomas. Are you going to say? Really? You're going to say the Big Hurt doesn't? Well, he would never get traded to a Japanese team.
Well, it's funny. When I saw this, like, I didn't see it when it was first out in theaters because I was like 6 or 7 or something like that. So yeah. I probably saw it a little bit later when I was around 10 or so. That was when I was really into baseball and obsessed with it. But, by the time I saw it, Frank Thomas was the Big Hurt. Remember, in his rookie year, he wasn't really the Big Hurt. He actually looked pretty slim. So in the movie, he looked to a part. He looked like a rookie who also just happened to be, you know, bigger, unrealistically big. But
was this released his rookie year?
It was around his rookie. I thought it was his exact rookie year because you know how baseball is.
He's credited as rookie.
You know, he was in his physical prime. Like he looked really good in shape. But by the time I saw him, even though it was technically the Big Hurt's prime in baseball, when I was at, when I was into it, he was big, be it, you know, allegedly for steroids or whatever, but he was huge. Mm-hmm. So when I saw him in a movie and I was just like, is that Frank Thomas? This is ridiculous. And then I realized, you know, he looks in shape. This is like a narrow window when you can use Frank Thomas because, like, just the year after that, it wouldn't have made sense. He would have looked like the grown ass man from all this alleged steroid use.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was funny that was the choice that they used. I was like, man, Frank Thomas?
Yeah, I would say, you know what? Honestly, if I had to say which animal or which actor doesn't belong, I want to go less with actors and more just with 90s white guy hairstyles.
Oh, so were you talking about the agent?
I'm not only talking about the agent, but also when he goes to meet the other American ball players that are there, one of them's got like a full-on rat tail, like foot-long rat tail. And I caught it just on the edge when I saw it. And I was like, I rewound just to make sure to be like, does that guy really have? And he did. And I was just like, what the fuck movie? Why do I have to look at the worst hair?
To the best cameo. Great transition.
Oh, my God.
My best cameo was Mr. Let me get his name because I keep forgetting it. It's Bradley Leslie, who is – he played baseball for a few years. But that's not what's important. What's important is he played my favorite fucking character in Little Big League. He played – I think he had another name that was like the Hammer. He always has like a big – because he's like a huge dude. He's six.
His actual nickname is something Animal. Like that.
Yeah, the Animal. Blackout. He was Blackout in Little Big League. And I fucking loved him. Like, I still remember him. And like, my mental image of this guy is what he looked like in Little Big League with that huge fucking handlebar mustache. And he's just like, his shirt's always unbuttoned. He looks like he's been sweating just since birth. It's just so good. I fucking love that guy so much. I wish we got to see him in more baseball movies.
That dude used the sweat to climb out of the womb. that's true. Rest in peace. There are multiple baseball players that appear in this movie, many of whom were professional players that actually had, like, ended up playing in Japan. If we're going to go into best cameo, it's a Japanese film, guys. And if you haven't noticed yet from all our conversations, I happen to be a fan of Japanese cinema. Mm. So I'm going to say my favorite cameo is actually an actor named Jun Hamamura. And Jun Hamamura played in a lot of movies, a lot of Japanese cinema, including a lot of classics like... The Burmese Harp. He was in High and Low with Akira Kurosawa is directing. The I have some notes here as well. He starred in the original Gamera film. The he worked a lot with director Kon Ichikawa. The best part about this is you guys have no idea who he is, but he played the grandfather. So when Tom Selleck for half a scene, the grandfather who's also like, you also have a hole in your swing.
That's great.
That was actually an incredibly talented, incredibly well-trained, and incredibly prolific actor who had worked with some of the biggest Japanese directors in history. And he gets like three lines, basically, two of which are actually all three of which are yelling. Mostly at Hiroko, but also one directed at Tom Selleck.
Yeah, that's
yeah, wild. That is.
But
that,
I'm almost not.
That is surprised. My favorite cameo. Yep,
that's crazy. All right, finally, we're coming up on time. Are you guys sold? Where are you at with this film?
Oh hell yeah, I'm sold. In fact, I want to point out the product placement as well, because I am definitely sold on that. because the most important product placement that occurs within this movie is all alcohol based.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Every American beer that we see somebody drink in this movie is Coors. Every Japanese beer that we see somebody drink in this movie is Asahi. And whiskey that is junk between Tom Selleck's character and his coach, that is Johnny Walker Black Label. And so I just want to take a moment here and say, I respect these choices. They're not my favorite choices, but I respect them. Sapporo is the best Japanese beer.
Is important.
I will fight anybody that says different.
It is not a product or a brand, but I loved the noodles in the stands. Like people slurping noodles with chopsticks in the stands. I just thought that was a great detail. And I was like, I want to eat noodles in a Japanese baseball game.
I do. You know what? I'm a little upset that it did not appear to involve any of the ice cream in a plastic cap. You know what I'm talking about? When they have like the plastic like ball cap and then they would put like scoops of ice cream and that's what you eat. Like I feel Japan is missing out on that, but I would totally take noodles and I would absolutely eat noodles any day in any ballpark.
There's no way they don't have little plastic caps that eat noodles out of.
They've got
There's no way. There's no that's an easy win.
Yeah.
the noodles cracks me up. I wonder if they view it like we view hot dogs. They're like, put that in your body?
Hey, no, because they eat when when the like guy from the Dodgers is there with the terrible ponytailed agent and they're sitting in the stands and they're just like eating food in like every shot. One of the things that they eat is a hot dog on a stick. So they're eating hot dogs in Japanese stadiums. At least those guys are, because all the other Japanese folks in the area know not to eat that thing. But the Americans, they don't know better. So they're just like chowing down on it. Like, yeah, it's kind of like a corn dog.
Well, you know how we are. When we go somewhere, we got to find the nearest glizzy shop to sustain ourselves.
That's true. All
right. Are you sold? I live off
tacos in foreign countries.
George.
On the premise of the movie, which is bringing this dude to Japan to play for your team so you can beat your big rival, I say no. He wasn't that good, and it was a lot more work than expected to get him to help you win. And I really think that the only reason they won is because it's a movie. So I would say I'm not fucking with this premise. I think that it was actually kind of a bad idea and they should have put their resources in other directions. But it worked out.
So I would argue that it wasn't a bad idea. It's just the problem is it happened all off screen. Because it's just like, he starts training with a coach and then next thing you know, he's almost the home run champ. Is this like so? The time frame of that is like kind of crazy. Going from a third, maybe even half of the season being a bum to home run champ. This is like, god damn.
Well, so, all right.
Maybe
he's not the home run champ, but he's chasing a record for most consecutive games with home runs.
Oh,
but
okay.
The other thing is the other thing though that he brings is he notices and the other Japanese players that don't want to lose face, so they're not willing to take risks. And he gets them to start taking more risks, so they do end up doing a lot better over time because they are now willing to do things like dive for a ball that they might miss.
That's true. They take things from other countries and make them better. God, this movie's deep.
Mm-hmm. That's baseball, baby. That is Japanese baseball.
All right.
George, what are you smirking at? Baseball is America's greatest pastime.
I'm just really happy for you that you have found so much depth in this movie, Evan.
You have
I thought
no
I was going to be the one geeking out in
no
fucking
idea.
Evan.
Oh, God, no. I love baseball, man. Shit, I grew up worshiping the 90s Braves. This is fantastic.
Man.
My dad did not watch a lot of sports when I was a kid. Sometimes we'd watch football, mostly college, admittedly, but we did watch a lot of baseball. There were a lot of Braves games, and it was right in that sweet spot where you're getting like Maddox is still there. Then we start seeing guys like Chipper Jones and John Schmoltz and like all of those guys starting to pop up. A lot of Hall of Famers. And honestly, like that was, oh, that was a blast. I loved that. So yes, I love baseball.
Good years.
And I was a shitty outfielder, but I found out in high school that I actually was pretty damn good at first base.
Have you heard of the professional baseball player Dexter Fowler?
Mm-mm.
He played for the Colorado Rockies for a few years, but his dad got me into Little League.
Like, shit.
He just saw me in a neighborhood playing, you know, with his sons and other random kids, and he was just like, "You need to play a Little League for my team."
Damn.
Yeah, I ended up playing Little League for a few years.
Very nice. I also played Little League, which is why I know I was a shit outfielder.
I was great, man. I was a fucking beast. All right. Well, I think that's it for the show. Who's up next for recommending the movie?
Oh God,
I think
it's
that
George.
Has to be George, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be George.
Okay. Well, Brandon, I'm directing this one to you. I mean, Evan was going to watch it too, so I don't really know why I said that. But for the next week's episode, I am challenging you to watch the 1990 disaster, wonderful disaster that is Dick Tracy.
Oh, motherfucker. Oh, okay. Shit. I saw that shit in theaters, son. Let's do this.
Have you seen this, Brandon?
You know what's on it? I'm 90% sure that I saw it when I was a kid, but I also don't remember a single fucking thing about it. And every time that I hear it brought up, I'm like, I know I saw it, but why can I can't even remember a scene. There's nothing I can remember about this movie.
Just imagine
blacked it out.
Warren Beatty in a felt fedora, baby.
It might have been a defense mechanism.
Yeah, I'm afraid to watch it. Cause like what if something gets unlocked? Cause there's no way I can just forget a movie like this. Like this doesn't happen. So cool. You know, if something, you know, if I'm running out on the street buck naked because of a nervous breakdown, I want you to know it's because of you.
All right. Well, next time we are going to talk about Dick Tracy, and hopefully it does not unlock trauma that gets you arrested.
Is it wrong that I'm kind of hoping it does? So see y'all next time.